Welcome to the Prickly Couch podcast, where three mujeres have real conversations. We'll share our stories and talk about wellness, familias, work, and everything in between in our experiences as Latina women. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Prickly Couch. Today, we have one of our really good friends and colleague, Jasmine Mavrakis. And we will be talking about eating disorders and trauma, catching up, and talking about recent presentations that we've been doing. So welcome, Jasmine and Karen.
Yay.
How are you doing?
Yay.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, welcome. It's been a while since you've been in our space in this way. So what's new with you since 2020?
Yes, which shout out to that podcast episode. I know we recorded it, but I think it's really good. I got to go back and listen again.
Should we share a little bit about that? Like, where, Yasmin, where were you in 2020 and Prickly Pear? And like, for those, I mean, if we have like newer folks that haven't listened to the episode.
New fans. Yes. So yeah, I think when we did the last recording, I was, I'm a dietitian, if we didn't say that already, but I was doing nutrition counseling at Prickly Pear in 2020, end of 2019 into 2021. And yeah, that's probably where we were when we did the last recording, I think. And then at the end of 2021, I started transitioning to my practice, Mavrakis Nutrition, and I've been there for the last almost 2 years. I guess it's 2023 now, so here we are.
Mm-hmm. You know, like how fast it's gone, this 3 years, and a blur. I was going to say a blast.
But it was a blast.
Not it's a blast and a blur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Jasmine, can you talk a little bit more about, what you do as a dietitian? Cause a lot of people will, you know, they hear a lot of this wellness, personalities on Instagram, a lot of nutritionists, and they might have a hard time differentiating, you know, that role versus what you do.
Yeah. And again, I'll have to listen back to see how I've evolved as a dietitian over the 3-4 years since I met y'all. But I guess the best way I could describe my work is two parts. One is supporting folks with discovering what gentle nutrition can look like for them, whether that's folks who are in the process of recovering from an active eating disorder or the disordered eating spectrum, and or it might include folks who are don't have any history of disordered eating or eating disorders, but they're really wanting to approach their medical care from a weight inclusive approach or weight neutral approach versus a weight centric approach. So we can talk a little bit more about that in a bit, but I feel really passionate about that intersection of how can we still incorporate gentle nutrition, things like intuitive eating, which I know those things have maybe been buzzwords as well on social media lately, but integrating how do we really support folks in taking care of their medical care, their preventative and chronic disease management in a way that is not creating an eating disorder, triggering an eating disorder, or harmful to their mental health. And I think particularly, you know, folks who have chronic conditions are at risk of really being taken advantage of by diet culture, by folks in the media, right? Of selling the latest best cure that's going to solve everything. But I feel really passionate about working with those folks and really getting to dig into the emotions behind eating, what's going on there, how that's showing up for their lives, and get to support them through the process.
I like how you put it, like in this very succinct way, what you do, because it's very comprehensive, the support that you provide to folks, right? And in many ways, it is it is therapeutic in this different way than, you know, individual therapy, psychological therapy, but it is a lot of processing, a lot of emotion, identification, different skills, right, that you bring in to be able to teach people how to connect with food in a different way and with their bodies in a different way.
Yeah. Yasmin, to a term that you said stood out to me, because I don't think I've heard it as much as the other one, which is like gentle nutrition and versus like intuitive eating, because I've heard about intuitive eating. That to me is the buzzword that has been going around. What is gentle nutrition, and is there a difference between gentle nutrition and intuitive eating?
Yeah, great question. Thanks for asking. And it's helpful for me to remember that the buzzwords that are on my social media pages, my bubble, are not everyone else's. But yeah, so for those of y'all who might not be familiar, intuitive eating has 10 principles. And some of those might include things that you hear more often about, like honoring your hunger, your fullness, rejecting diet culture, overcoming emotional eating, and finding joyful movement, for example. Those are a few of the different principles. And those can be different areas that, you know, a dietitian or a therapist can help you navigate. Gentle nutrition is actually it's the 10th principle of intuitive eating. And so there's this interesting way of going through these principles that for some, they feel really eager to go ahead and jump forward and say, okay, let's cut to the chase. Let's do the gentle nutrition, or let's tell me, you know, how to eat, what to eat. But if we're skipping too quickly to that, that can be harmful because we're not really first laying the foundational work. So it's really intentionally positioned. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I also am, some dietitians think you have to go in a certain order. I don't want to gatekeep information that's helpful, right? And so I think that's where working one-on-one with a provider and, you know, you get that support of navigating, okay, it doesn't necessarily have to be in a specific order that you navigate these different principles. How can we start to incorporate when it feels appropriate? Maybe not someone who's, you know, active in eating, in an eating disorder, getting these gentle nutrition principle education, but maybe weaving it in gently so that when we're talking about how do we honor our hunger, for example, someone does have tangible food ideas or examples on what they can use to honor their hunger, just as an example, right? So in general, though, to answer your question, gentle nutrition is this idea of really providing nutrition to support someone's health in a way that is gentle, isn't rigid, it is flexible, and it's integrating a little bit of that nutrition education, nutrition science, and weaving that into the intuitive eating cues that our body gives us.
Yeah, thank you for answering that. There's, as you were describing how, you know, you don't want to be a gatekeeping provider and that you really work intentionally with the client in no order, there's something freeing about what you said about that, like having a provider who's willing to meet you where you are. And even if it's not what they learned or the order that they learned things are going to be in, that they're willing to be that flexible and meet you where you are. There's just something very freeing about working, having a provider that can work with you like that. So yeah, thank you for being that. Thank you for being that provider who does that. That's amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, I think us as dietitians, especially in this space, kind of hit a opposite extreme where intuitive eating was maybe set as like this Bible, right? Where it was like preachy. And I think it can be a helpful tool. It doesn't have to be the only tool. And these set of principles can be guiding for folks that find that structure, having, you know, having something tangible really helps. But for others, that might not be appropriate. And so I want to be cautious of also, like, as I talk about intuitive eating, or, you know, it's a book, it's one framework that we can use, and it doesn't have to be the only one. And that you know, the idea of moving towards something, right? Sometimes I even have clients who have the opposite. They say, okay, I don't know if I'm ready to talk about joyful movement. I don't know if I'm ready to talk about gentle nutrition, right? And they might feel in that way for some time. And how do we as providers get to even explore, you know, sharing, like, you know, from my observations, it sounds like you're ready because of X, Y, Z. What if we carefully try, right? Even if it feels new, right? It reminds you of maybe years prior of, you know, nutrition info that was unhelpful. What if we try a little bit and then we can always scale back and remove it, right? And again, that's like really in the nuance of working over time with someone and knowing, are they ready for that? Or is that going to be really triggering or unhelpful to them?
Mm-hmm. This kind of reminds me, or very much reminds me, I should say, of the topic that we've been presenting on, right? Trauma-informed care and both the psych therapy and nutrition counseling levels in with folks that have eating disorders. And I think one of the points that comes to mind is that what you were highlighting, that and around this flexibility that is needed, because sometimes we can move into a lot of rigidity, especially when we're talking about health, right? Something is healthy or unhealthy, and really fall into these dichotomies. And so by adopting some of these lenses that we talk about, I think that we're actually doing more of a service to the community, right? To meet them where they're at, and be able to get their needs being met.
Mm-hmm. And how cool, right? That like humans are so complex that we're not like, you know, you can't just enter something into ChatGPT and like a certain formula. This isn't like, you know, we're not robots. And so really recognizing whenever I think as providers, we, you know, can fall into moving so far to the opposite that it does become rigid and really mirrors, you know, certain disorders like eating disorders, where there is that rigidity, there is that good or bad. And even when we use frameworks that are supportive and we start labeling that as like the gold standard, it can really exclude and be dismissive of a lot of other folks who maybe don't fit into that perfect, you know, box that worked for that provider, worked for, you know, said clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you're really highlighting how complex eating disorders are and how it looks different for every individual, right? And you have to find a way how to work with them and how to be that flexible provider that is also being trauma-informed. And so I want to ask you, how do you see that eating disorders show up in the Latina community? And how is it different, or how is it alike, or how does that look?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities, right? I'm glad you asked it on both ends, because I think we see a lot of similarities. And then sometimes it's in my opinion, maybe the ways that we go about treatment that might be individualized, right? But we see similar symptoms, like bulimia. We see maybe different forms of purging being used, whether that's, you know, laxatives or supplements versus compensatory exercise versus purging by vomiting, right? We see all of those in, you know, all communities. We see restrictive anorexia, we see ARFID, we see binge eating disorder, right? And so that's at least what I've seen in practice. And I think sometimes what we don't see is as much representation in the diagnoses of these, because of the way that folks are being asked questions in assessments, because of, you know, assessment tools that aren't culturally competent, we might be missing some of the behaviors that people have. And I'm sure Gabby, since I as a dietitian can't diagnose, Gabby, I'm sure you have more insight as well into you know, the way that we're missing the mark on those diagnoses.
Well, I think that, yeah, that we don't have the measures right that are representative of everybody that we've seen. They're done mostly with white middle class folks, and we know that that is not really representative of every community or the majority really of those of communities, but especially BIPOC and, you know, Latinx communities. The other thing is so stigmatized to talk about eating disorders, especially when we tend to live in larger bodies. So sometimes, I think a lot of times when I think of eating disorders, we always think of anorexia, right? And the presentation of anorexia. We don't think of people being in average size body or in a larger body, and how we ask questions, what our biases are about how people look and what that means about health, I think guides too. If we do ask those questions, and then if we assess for an eating disorder or not. So there's, I think there's that layer. And honestly, most people are not trained on eating disorders as providers. So I would say that a lot of people don't even ask questions related to eating behaviors when they're doing their initial intake, or when they have people on different medications, or when, you know, in primary care, or when people are presenting with trauma, or some other disorder that might be highly comorbid with eating disorders. And so unless somebody is, I think, in an extreme presentation of eating disorders, it's gonna be hard for providers to catch it, because they don't have the resources and the education to do that. Or they might have, yeah, like very stereotypical ideas of that. And also a big part in the community is dieting and supplements is so prevalent, right? And so it's so very normalized to engage in some of these behaviors that we ourselves might not recognize those as disorder eating or dieting behaviors, or acknowledge that there's issues that might be connected to some of those behaviors as well.
Yeah, I think so much of it comes into, like you said, just the awareness and recognition of it, Gabby, and also on the treatment side of things, how do we, you know, regardless of, you know, the presentation of someone's eating disorder, how do we make the treatment modalities really be culturally affirming, right? And not having, you know, food meal plan suggestions, for example, if that's part of someone's eating disorder treatment plan, or not having that being Eurocentric diet, if, you know, those are not the foods that someone is preferring or has access to. And I think too about with, on the flip side, aside from just like the nutrition side of things, also family dynamics, I think that's where I really see the biggest differentiation in like how I might treat a Latina who has, you know, an eating disorder, disordered eating, compared to a white client. Is there's so much more complexity to family dynamics at play, community dynamics, friendship dynamics, right? And that's not to say that diet culture isn't present in white communities, of course it is, but this added layer that's really interwoven, especially with, you know, a lot of folks being more present in their family communities than, you know, white folks might be, depending on the age.
Yeah, well, thank you both for answering that, because I think this is a complicated topic and we don't have a lot of time to cover it, but y'all are covering it really succinctly, so thank you. And that brought me two questions, talking about therapy and nutrition, family dynamics. So if somebody was struggling with an eating disorder or had a suspicion that they felt like they had disordered eating or maybe just wanted to explore that, what would they expect in therapy? So that's the first question. And then the second one is, what kind of therapist should they be looking for? And what kind of tips do you have for them to find the right therapist that can help them through that experience that they're trying to explore or that issue that they're trying to address? So I'll leave it there.
With eating disorders, I think that, honestly, I would say with any presenting concern that we have in our community, we need somebody that understands everything that we bring into the room, right? So, and that's when I had like a whole talk and conversation around social determinants of health and all the different pieces and systems, right, that intersect with our individual identities. So this could be like a whole podcast series and a whole series of presentations, but I think that understanding that we cannot change eating disorders at the individual level alone and in isolation is important. Somebody, I think that both in nutrition and therapy, that has a solid understanding of trauma. And not just because it's a buzzword to say that we're all trauma-informed, but actually in practical ways that they implement those principles. And that means being client-led, collaborative, that works in a relationship, that builds trust and safety. And he's able to like comment on what is happening, present focus for the client, being able to treatment plan alongside the clients, and that has an understanding of the impact of all the isms and intersectionalities that are part of our community is going to be really, really important. So in looking for someone, specifically for eating disorders, people that are coming from a weight inclusive or health at every size lens, it's going to be important. And those are frameworks, as Jasmine described, that really take into consideration this health perspective that I'm talking about, the social determinants of health, and not just focusing on behaviors or just focusing on BMI or weight or some of those markers, but looking at the person holistically. Those would be my two nuggets that if I was looking for a therapist myself, that is what I would be looking for. Jasmine, I don't know if on your side there's something that you're like would be important for people to know about taking nutrition counseling for eating disorders.
Yeah, I really encourage folks to just ask a lot of questions, right? Typically most dietitians or therapists offer, you know, the opportunity before that first appointment just to see if you're a good fit. And I think asking some of these open-ended questions, really interviewing us as providers, you know, like, hey, what are your thoughts on this? What are your, you know, maybe a couple questions where you're able to weed out folks that might have that more, you know, inflexible approach where they're like, this is the only way that I offer treatment, a hard yes or hard no to, you know, meal plans or to intuitive eating or to on and on, right? Versus someone who's really able to say like, well, it depends, right? Which doesn't sound as exciting of and certain of an answer, but really is going to be a lot more client-led and appropriate to actually serve you best. So I think that's, you know, I would encourage brainstorming what those questions are ahead of time and what maybe you've found not to be helpful from previous providers, if you've worked with someone before, and bringing that up and seeing, you know, what the response might be too.
Thank you. That when you said like, oh, it depends, just thinking about hearing that from a provider would sound, make me feel like uneasy, but it is a sign of somebody that is willing to work with you because they don't know the answers right then. And they're being honest about it and transparent. So thank you. Thank you, Gabby. And thank you, Jasmine, for sharing that. Jasmine, thank you for being here with us. Is there anything else you want to share about your experiences or any resources that you think are going to be helpful?
I mentioned this in your talk yesterday, but I wanted to name always being a lifelong learner. And so as we're talking, I'm like, oh, did I say this incorrectly? Did I say culturally affirming, or did I say culturally competent? Like, I don't want to use the latter, like, you know, and so I just want to normalize that we're, you know, if you're listening to this and you're a client or a provider and you're here learning, you know, we're here learning alongside y'all, and we're not the experts. we're just here to support. So yeah, that's all I wanted to share. And yeah, feel free to connect with me. I can share maybe in the show notes a little bit of my contact info, my social media, all that good stuff. And excited to, and maybe we can drop the old episode in 2020. I thought it was good.
Yes, so. We'll link it. We'll have your information in there. Yeah. So people can connect with you for sure. Thank you so much for being here, Jasmine. But I do have one more question for you. We did a whole presentation yesterday, and I want to, you know, give a shout out to the people that organized an amazing conference on BIPOC eating disorders. Shout out to Whitney and Angela. They rocked. They put together this amazing set of speakers to talk about the reality, right, of eating disorder, what people call it. So if you had to choose one nugget of our presentation, or a couple, but at least one, what would you want people to know about the reality of eating disorders among Latinx people coming from this culturally affirmative way?
Let's see, one nugget. Like, can I pull the slides up? What did we talk about again? I think, are you asking nugget for providers, or
can be any types of people?
Something that really stands out to me, that's a slide that I always get most excited when on it, is that, and I've learned so much from Gabby on this, is that clinician client dynamic. And I guess this would really just go across the board for BIPOC clients, and or really any clients, right? We just want to be trauma informed. And so having that exploration of whether you're a client, really this is something you deserve, is a clinician client dynamic that is client-centered, it's client-led, and is really advocating for your care, believing you, trusting what you're saying, right, and also challenging you. And so that's a little bit of the nugget, maybe not the largest one, but the one I get I get excited to talk about the whole thing, but I get really excited about that, because as dietitians, right, that's the opposite of what we learned in school, of us dietitians being the expert. We tell people who don't know, you know, what to do. And this idea of just that I learned so much from therapists like Gabby and everyone at Prickly Pear is just getting to flip that upside down, and how much better that is for everyone. It takes a huge burden off us as clinicians as well, right? So not specific to just Latinx, but, you know, clients of any sort.
Yeah, Gabby, I love that. Well, I will say, like, in a nutshell, I like to think of the idea that nothing happens in a vacuum. Everything has a reason, why, and a function. And so to understand what eating disorder or any other, right, behavior has for us, then it can open up the other side of figuring out what can be helpful. And the other piece, I said it yesterday, and I kind of stayed thinking about this, but remembering that trauma takes so much from us, right? And one of the things that it takes is to be able to dream about the future. And so as providers, understanding that, so that the question is not for the client just to figure out, like, okay, what does the future look like? But it's also processing and creating space as part of recovery and healing to imagine that future, right? So not only building it, but also slowing down and really working on being able to hold hope and imagine a future that is different and that is outside of that eating disorder. Yeah. So with that, we'll pause. We're so grateful that you're here, Jasmine. And we have another episode with our awesome guest where we talk about social media and eating disorders and body image. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.